most populous U.S. state, one which Hillary Clinton won in 2008 over Barack Obama. The mounting signs of an electoral setback in California have led to increased press speculation over the consequences of such a defeat for the Clinton campaign overall. ABC News mulled the issue. What happens if Hillary Clinton loses California to Bernie Sanders? The British newspaper The Independent published a column headlined, "Hillary Clinton Could Lose Democratic Nomination to Bernie Sanders." The Wall Street Journal editorial page published an op-ed column by an embittered former Bill Clinton political advisor, Douglas Schoen, under the headline, "Clinton Might Not Be the Nominee," which suggested that a landslide loss in California might produce an outside intervention from the Obama White House, installing either Secretary of State John Kerry or Vice President Joe Biden as a substitute for Clinton. Whatever the outcome on June 7, neither Clinton nor Sanders will have sufficient elected delegates to claim the nomination outright. Clinton currently leads in elected delegates by 1769 to 1501, and another 761 will be chosen through June 7. Sanders would not reach the 2,383 required for nomination if he won every single delegate. Clinton would have to win 81%, a practical impossibility given rules regarding proportional representation. The nomination will thus be decided by the votes of the 712 superdelegates, governors, members of Congress, members of the Democratic National Committee, former presidents, who have expressed an overwhelming preference for Clinton, but do not actually cast votes until the Democratic National Convention meets July 25 to 28 in Philadelphia. Sanders addressed this issue at campaign rallies Tuesday and Wednesday, warning supporters that the media might declare Clinton the winner of the nomination after the polls close at 8 p.m. Eastern Time in New Jersey. Such projections would assume no change of heart by any of the superdelegates who have publicly voiced support for Clinton. "That is factually incorrect, it's just not factually correct," he said. Instead, the end of the primaries would mark a new stage in the campaign, with each candidate competing for the allegiance of superdelegates, particularly those from states where the popular vote had gone one way, while the superdelegates had gone the other. In California, for example, there are 71 superdelegates. Nearly all of them, like Governor Jerry Brown and Senators Dianne Feinstein and Barbara Boxer, siding with Clinton. Sanders has flatly rejected suggestions by Feinstein and other Clinton supporters that he halt his campaign and accept Clinton as the de facto nominee. A national poll released Wednesday found that 57% of Democrats and independents wanted Sanders to stay in the race, even in a polling sample that favored Clinton over Sanders by 46 to 42%. Sanders may also be holding out in an effort to have greater influence in the selection of a vice presidential candidate. He is no doubt concerned that if Clinton does not pick someone with sufficient left credentials, perhaps Sanders himself, then it will be more difficult to convince Sanders supporters to vote for Clinton in the general election and to channel the social anger motivating those backing him into the Democratic Party. While Clinton's support is slipping among Democratic primary voters, there are at least two constituencies where her backing remains rock solid. Fortune magazine reported Wednesday that CEOs of Fortune 500 companies favored Clinton over Trump by 58 to 42%. The heavily Republican group cited Clinton's support and Trump's professed opposition to U.S. trade agreements as the key issue. And an oil industry consultant, speaking with CNBC ahead of Thursday's much-anticipated meeting of the oil-producing and exporting countries, said that OPEC favored Clinton, who is known to have advocated the more aggressive U.S. intervention into the Syrian civil war. He said, "It is no secret that the Saudis and other Gulf Sunni powers are rooting for Mrs. Clinton." End quote. also today on the World Socialist website. More than 2,500 refugees drowned in Mediterranean so far this year. Strike wave against labor law spreads in France. Returning Verizon workers face consequences of CWA betrayal. UK firms use new regulations to cut pay and conditions. Turkey seeks increased presidential powers amid rising social tension. A wave of summary executions following the Philippine election. India, Congress Party and Stalinists suffer debacle in state election. New Zealand government, opposition housing policies grossly inadequate. French strike movement exposes bankruptcy of new anti-capitalist party. U.S. media witch hunts parents of boy nearly killed by gorilla at the Cincinnati Zoo. And Sydney University's U.S. Studies Center, a bastion of pro-war strategy and propaganda. You can find all this and more today on the World Socialist website, WSWS.org. This has been Joseph Santolan for the World Socialist website.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. Los Angeles striking port truckers, elected officials, clergy, and community leaders held a press conference Thursday to protest the planned closing of the port. Workers planned what they said would be a massive protest at the Los Angeles Harbor Commission meeting. Hundreds of striking workers are demanding that port companies stop violating labor laws. Picket lines continued at Port of Los Angeles terminals and marine yards Thursday. The workers say misclassification as contractors rather than employees results in wage theft and other labor rights violations. Port drivers so far have been awarded more than $32 million in back pay in 300 separate decisions by California's labor commissioner. There are more than 500 more wage theft cases waiting to be heard. The Graduate Employees Union at Portland State University has been certified by Oregon's Employment Relations Board, bringing 800 new workers into the labor movement. The new union for Portland State University graduate students is affiliated with the American Federation of Teachers. Andres Oswell is a grad student worker at Portland State.
Something that comes up a lot is pushback that graduate employees are seen as students. I think the fact that this is something that's become such a widespread issue has shown that there really is a collective interest around the workers as employees and the situation that they have as employees at the university. So that's something we're really excited to be a part of. It's pretty exciting because there hasn't been a large-scale public employee unionization in Oregon for a while. So we're pretty excited about everything that's happened.
The Graduate Employees Union is working to identify issues and prepare to bargain their first contract. Oswell says that the union has a good relationship with the university. He says in addition to compensation, issues include health care costs, workload increases, and fees charged to the graduate students. Hillary Clinton blasted Donald Trump's ability to be president Thursday, slamming him as dangerously incoherent.
I believe the person the Republicans have nominated for president cannot do the job. Donald Trump's ideas aren't just different. They are dangerously incoherent. They're not even really ideas, just a series of bizarre rants, personal feuds, and outright lies.
The Chicago Teachers Union and the Chicago Public Schools met Thursday for a bargaining session on a new labor contract for teachers. CTU President Karen Lewis says teachers might be willing to forgo annual raises in the new contract if Chicago and the state government step up to find other revenue sources for Chicago public schools. Lewis is critical of comments from the district's CEO, Forrest Claypool, that schools may not open in September due to what Lewis calls the district's broke-on-purpose fiscal crisis. Lewis says that statement is another example of Claypool's failed leadership. WIN is made possible in part by the OPEIU. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
It's the 420 Drug War News. Last week, the Cultural Baggage Show focused on the green rush of folks going to Colorado, Oregon, and elsewhere to cash in on the marijuana frenzy. Here to talk about the situation in Washington State is the head of the Seattle Hemp Fest, Mr. Vivian McPeak.
You recently had a piece in the Seattle PI that talked about your situation. Why don't you fill us in on what you wrote there?
Sure. Well, you know, basically, nobody's ever legalized cannabis in this, you know, after 80 years of prohibition before, and there's really no right or wrong way to do it. And so every state is, the states that are flipping are doing it in their own ways. And personally, if I was thinking about how I want to do it, I wouldn't copy Washington State. You know, back in 1998, we passed I-692 legalizing medical marijuana. And patients could possess up to 24 ounces of usable cannabis, a 60-day supply. But our legislature just turned that completely around, and they brought 24 ounces down to 3 ounces of cannabis. And previously, patients could grow up to 15 plants. Now we're down to only a handful of plants. And I just think it's crazy. You know, here in Washington State, if you pass somebody a doobie or you hand somebody a gram of pot, technically, it's a felony. So I'm really glad that, you know, you can walk into a rec store, you could buy, you put a half an ounce of pot in each pocket, man, and walk out, get in your car, drive by without looking in the rearview mirror. And I think that's a big, huge step forward, but you can't even grow a single plant, if you're not a patient. So I think that we have a long ways to go. You know, here in Washington State, I think we've kind of taken two steps forward and a step backward.
Right, and the situation there is that in order to be able to grow recreationally, I guess you have to get a license through the state and pay some fees, I imagine, right?
Well, you can't grow recreationally, period. The only people who can grow, well, you can grow if you're a licensed cultivator, but that's not recreational. That's a commercial operation. But an individual, an adult, 21 and over, you can't grow even one plant unless you're a medical marijuana patient. And then you have to sign up on the registry, which I have trouble with right there because, you know, this presidential election could turn everything around. And if you're on some federal, if you're on some state registry, then I think there's a good possibility the federal government could end up getting that information because nothing is secure these days.
Again, that was Mr. Vivian McPeak. He heads up the efforts in Seattle for the Seattle Hemp Fest. We'll have part two of this discussion tomorrow. And if you'd like to hear the full interview with Vivian and others about the Green Rush, please check out the most recent Cultural Baggage program. Dean Becker, DrugTruth.net.
And coming up next on Free Radio 101.3 FM, yes, it's another edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, the June 2nd edition. Wow, in the middle of June already. You're also going to be hearing this at freakradio.org and possibly as an archive on the Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom website, huffsantacruz.org, which is also kind of being provided through the grace of Radio Libre. I'm Robert Norris, and for the next 2 hours, we're going to be running through a lot of street interviews, some commentary by me, and unfortunately no phone calls. However, the good news is that today, Thursday, even as I speak, the new makeshift studio is being prepared by doughty free radio workers. Not me. I'm busy making a show. That's my excuse. But the hardcore technicians and hard workers are there cooking up studio facilities, which, well, it's still uncertain how long we'll be there for or how effectively it's going to work out, but at least for a period of time, we will have a phone line, you will be able to call us, and I'll be announcing that as soon as it goes into effect. In fact, you'll probably hear about it before my show. Free Radio has for 21 years been largely indoors in a studio with one or two phone lines, and we've been a community resource that has enabled you to raise issues and discuss things and put out opinions that you would not normally be able to do on mainstream or even alternative media as easily as you can on Free Radio, or at least on the shows of some of the broadcasters. So let's begin, and I'll continue announcements, commercials, and even some substance and interviews from the street.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of bread lines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. Song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
And welcome again to Bathroom Spears Broadsides. Studio time should be coming up soon. We're still looking for a transmitter site because July may be the doom date for us when we lose our transmitter site. And having unsuccessfully sought one for the last 2 years, it doesn't look too favorable, the prospects. But if you have any thoughts or ideas about place where we could locate a transmitter, that's essentially all we need is a tree or a two-story building slightly on the edges of Santa Cruz or just out of the central downtown depression area where it's difficult to provide reception. Give a call. Call me at HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. That's a civil rights group that I work with at 423-4833. Again, 423-4833. If you're out of the area, 831-423-4833. So I want to apologize for, I kind of want to apologize for last Sunday's flashback show. Not because it wasn't a good flashback show. I really find, frankly, a lot of interest in some of these older shows, but of course I did them and the issues then, to some extent are still the issues now. But I also got some positive feedback from some other folks, which was encouraging. Not as much, though, so feel free to call in, all you folks, with your feedback at 423-4833. You can call during the show. You'll get a machine, but you can leave a message if you want to be a part of the collective, for instance. We're looking for new members. If you want to get more information about the studio, you want to donate to the studio, or you want more information about the group I work with, the other group, Huff Homeless United, that's also where you can leave a message and a phone number. If you have something you want to say about police misconduct, abuse, institutional discrimination, or some positive things, I have some great behavior from a particular agency department, call in and let me know about that, because I usually get the critical stories, and indeed that is what I tend to be seeking out usually. Others, like the Sentinel, can spend their time puffing the police department and fluffing away, and the city spends a lot of money on PR, it feels like to me. So I tend to do the opposite, which is to do a more critical examination of what's going on, at least in certain specific areas, mostly related to civil rights for poor people, general access to public spaces, and police department policies, and law enforcement generally, and their behavior toward just average folks, and even, well, particularly poor people, because I think they and folks, minorities, tend to get the end of the stick, so to speak. So we had a Freedom Sleepout number 47. That's 47 Tuesdays, more or less, one after another, of folks sleeping in defiance of the Santa Cruz anti-homeless sleeping ban, the municipal code that makes it illegal to actually, and these are the words, fall asleep or be asleep after 11 o'clock at night until 8:30 in the morning. And this is a law that's enforced all over the city. Admittedly, it isn't enforced for everyone, or else they just simply have the jails not just packed, but they'd have to, you know, build three or four more jails, which seems to be all the rage anyway. But this has been a demonstration that has targeted this law through appearing at the center of city government, where the ordinance was made, where it's maintained, and where it's funded. The police department is funded out of there, and their enforcement budget comes from the Santa Cruz City Council, which ignored an attempt to have the law reformed a few months ago, and a proposal presented by council member, former mayor Don Lane, and went down in flames 5-2. There has been some good news, though, of a kind. The anti-homeless, anti-RV ordinance, the law that makes it illegal to park anywhere in Santa Cruz at night in an RV unless you have a residential permit. And homeless people are specifically and abusively excluded from that category of being able to get a permit being a resident of Santa Cruz, though the federal government and the state governments and even the county government, in terms of voting, considers them to be residents. And they certainly pay taxes insofar as they pay sales taxes and buy things, not to mention the fact that they're human beings who are here, and they are a part of the community as much as certain entrenched interest groups want to expel them and create a different kind of community here, a gentrified community, which is going to be the subject of the next song I'm going to play by Ryan Harvey. But before I play the song, let's begin with... Well, again, let me conclude why I was apologizing about 5 minutes ago before I wandered off into this current discussion. I was apologizing because I had made a long show for Sunday, which actually was all new and original material from the streets, and it got eaten by my iPod, so I wasn't able to play it. So instead I had to dash out into service the two old flashback shows that I put on, which I think were worth playing, but I wish and I guess I apologize for my bad behaving iPod. Wow. In any case, which means I've got a backlog of stuff, some of which I'm going to have to skip. Maybe I'll play some of it on Sunday when I do a long morning show for all of you newcomers, 9:30 to 1, which covers a lot of the same, not necessarily, well, the same issues often, yes, because we have essentially the primary thing is to let people know how folks who are poor and outside live, and to give them a chance to speak out and speak with their voices. And I kind of hate it when some of the stuff gets left behind, but I only have a certain amount of time each week, and we'll do what we can with it. So First Friday is coming up. That's tomorrow, if you want to go downtown and mingle with the merchants, the tourists, and observe the amount of space taken up by commercial interests compared with that which is allowed to performers, vendors, and just folks who want to be there who are poor, unless they want to just rest and sit down. The vendors be gone law, the Vanish the Vendors Ordinance, which bans all handicraft vending. That's all that jewelry you see on tables. That's all those stones and precious rocks and the other kinds of things like T-shirts will be banned. And everything else will be restricted very tightly to the blue boxes or the blue bracketed areas that are called exempt zones. It will be illegal to bead, will be illegal to weave, will be illegal to face paint or massage anywhere, even inside the sacred blue boxes. The entire character of Pacific Avenue is being, I would have to say, violently changed. And the reason I say violently is, even though you don't see the violence, it is present in the form of police officers. And it's all going to soon going to be Parks and Rec Rangers, which I think are taking over the first alarm security thug function, who are there and can not only tell you to, here's a, you know, move along or you get a $250 ticket, but also they don't even have to give you a warning anymore for the so-called move-along law if you happen to be there as an artist with your paintings in a display device. You've been there for 61 minutes, that's a ticket. Of course, police officers could, of course, decline to do it, which many of them may. But putting these issues, as I've repeatedly said and will say again, in the hands of the police department means you have a police state. You know, it doesn't have necessarily all the trappings of Nazi insignias and Jewish pogroms, but it is police making decisions instead of the law. The law has given the police such broad discretion that they can choose to enforce or not to enforce as they wish. And that necessarily corrupts the police and also inflicts violence on the community, because those who get the preferential treatment are probably going to be those the police department knows and likes for one reason or another, is familiar with, doesn't regard as being uppity and political or suspicious looking in minority, whatever. So that's coming up, and that's really kind of a form of gentrification, which leads right into this next song.
Switching the colors in the neighborhood. by and switching the class. While some big developer's getting rich, sitting on his ass. Gotta pack bags and hit the road, or maybe hit the streets. Not poor enough for sympathy, not rich enough to compete. There's a difference between development and gentrification, and there's a difference between a local shop and a global corporation. One builds a higher standard that everyone enjoys. The other picks your pockets bare and gives you back the coins. That's gentrification. Gentrification.
Bombs, Neil, just before the line begins to move with
Robin.
And Robin, years ago, you got an opinion from John Barisoni, then city attorney, that you could, in fact, not only do your work for donation, your artwork, your painting, but also you could sell it.
Yes, I only did that to test that law that was happening in Sparks, Nevada. I forget the guy's name.
White versus the city of Sparks.
Yeah, right. And I sort of prevailed on that. And ever since, people, for the most part, are able somewhat freely to show their art, and I might add crafts, too, which was not necessarily within that law, but, you know, it may have be another law. So, I mean, I think it adds a dimension to the sort of...
There's now a ban, you know, on crafts. It will begin on June 24th. It was passed by the city council.
Showing that on Pacific Avenue?
Of anything, yeah. You can't, anything that, art is not banned, art is protected, but only inside the blue boxes.
Okay, that's semi-reasonable to say where, just so it can happen. I don't like it, but it, and it could be challenged. It's semi-reasonable until it's challenged.
Anything other than written material or painted material or audio material is banned from sale on Pacific Avenue, or display, or you can't even beadwork on Pacific Avenue anymore. You cannot do a caricature of someone on Pacific Avenue.
That should be covered under that Sparks law, so I'll hold on this motorcycle too.
Yeah.
And it could be challenged by that ninth district court law. If somebody chose to do that.
I hope somebody does, and thank you. We've been talking with
Robert. It's like looking at a mirror.
Thank you, Robin. Yours is better. He's got a sweet beard. Any street reports? No? Any reports from the street?
Reports?
Yes, sir.
What kind of reports?
Oh, stuff that's happened. Do you think people would be interested in positive or negative?
Well, stop by and say hi to the folks in the 15 Cold City Wingnut Motel.
How'd that go?
On your vacation.
Well, thank you for the quick update.
I just tell the folks while they're on their vacation, stop by and say hi to the folks at 15 Cold Street Wing.
Coral Street.
Stay there for a while.
And we've been talking with?
It's all a mystery to me.
A man in line. Any reports from the street, madam?
Yes, sir. I have some reports. They're strictly enforcing a move-along policy at the Galt Street Public Library by Seabright.
Tell me.
There's a new no-loitering sign in the front. They put in another bicycle rack, and so they're strictly enforcing that no-sitting, no-loitering, zero-tolerance policy. We have, of course, Susan Nemitz is coming from Minnesota to be the new library director. From what I understand, the library where she was working at has been providing an hour worth of outreach with social workers and with free food to the homeless. So I hope that will proceed back here to Santa Cruz.
Just
from
don't loiter as you eat your food.
There'll be no eating or loitering. Now, also, I want to make a note that the oversized ordinance was shot down pretty much at this point, but I encourage people to...
The Santa Cruz ordinance.
Yes, and I encourage people to lobby the Coastal Commission to deny the permit to the Santa Cruz City Council to stop the RV ban. We don't need to have that happening.
We've been talking with...
Julie Shaw with Santa Cruz Full-Timers RV Parking Rights and Safe Parking on Facebook. Thank you, Mr. North.
And the pooch in your hand is?
That's Del Monte. Del Monte went to Animal Services a couple of days ago, and he was in there for about a week ago, actually. And he was in there... No dressing, please. And he was in there for approximately 2 hours, and it was a $104 ransom.
Thanks, Julie.
Thank you.
Oh, okay. Any street report? Thank you, Julie. Any reports from the street?
No, same as hers.
Oh. Oh. Gotta watch my step there. Didn't break this.
Very good.
Really just had another street report.
And any reports from the street?
There's always reports from the street, you know that.
Right, but I'm wondering if you have anything specific you want to
say. Well, yeah, I'd like to say something positive. I was confronted by a police officer the other day because some, what I might call chronically annoyable, easily annoyable individual called to report me, and she came.
For what?
For parking, just for parking. In a place.
You're a parking criminal?
I'm a parking transgressor.
Oh.
Anyway, her name was Carly, and she was so polite. She was. I couldn't believe she was a police officer. I said, are you really... A legitimate officer? I used to just find that uniform in the... Anyway, she was very nice.
And we've been talking with? If you wish to say.
My name is Anonymous.
Thank you, Anonymous.
Sorry.
Any... Yeah? Okay, thank you, man. Any street reports?
No.
Who is the dog?
This is Daisy.
No problems with Daisy?
Nope. Training her.
Long time in town? I see you got a backpack on your back?
Yep.
And no hassles or tickets?
No.
Thank you, man. We've been talking with, if you wish to say.
Todd.
Thanks, Todd. Any reports from the street? Any street reports?
Nothing to comment.
Fair enough. Your own. Any street reports?
No.
Street reports of any kind?
Yes, I will say something.
Go ahead.
You guys better understand we're being taken over by the New World Order, and we better get our act together and treat others like we like to be treated, number one.
Sounds good.
Something like that. And stop.
We've been talking with?
We got to stop your punks name. Taking us over with their little psycho freak.
And what is your name, sir? For free radio. If you want to say it.
My name is, you better get it together, and we better get it together.
Well said. Thank you. Any street reports?
I don't think it's
any street reports?
No.
Reports from the street?
I know of or aware of.
Anything from the street? Any street reports?
What does that mean?
You know, stuff that's happened to you. Do you think people on free radio would like to know about?
I came to California, and that was the worst mistake of my life.
Because?
California sucks.
What specifically has happened to you that would lead you to say that?
Being homeless here.
And in Santa Cruz or in California in general?
California in general.
And how long have you been in Santa Cruz?
Like a week.
And what's your impression?
Shitty. First couple hours I was here, I got into a fight and robbed.
Wow. And anything happened since, or do you want to give more details on that if you want?
No, I'm done. Thank you, though.
We've been talking with, if you wish to say.
Toe tag.
Thank you, toe tag. All right, you two.
So we want to know what's going on.
That's what I want to know. That's why I'm talking to people in line.
All right. Well, we're still that close to being homeless. We're hanging in there.
We're doing okay.
And we're talking with
Jimmy Jones
and
Katie.
Katie and Jimmy Jones.
Okay, so
very interesting.
You see, that it's tough getting housing here in Santa Cruz.
You don't say.
And you have to work with your landlord, and it's tough because every landlord's different.
Yeah, and they
want
anything.
You to do more than just
pay
rent.
They can get away with anything here, too.
That's a very cynical view of our landlord.
It's absolutely true. I mean, they can do it and get away with it.
Because the demand...
They own the property, madam.
At least they
manage it. What about their problems?
But listen, the demand for housing is so high, they can jack their rents all up, and they can say, we want to come in and inspect your property every 2 months or whatever they want.
So you guys are in housing, but you're afraid to hit the streets?
Well, we've got a 30-day lease thing. So
day-to-day lease?
A 30-day lease.
30-day lease.
It could throw us out in 30 days, but...
I think it's... How long have you been there now?
Too long.
Oh, a long time.
I think you get 60 days now if they want to throw you out.
Oh, really?
Check California law, though.
Yeah, we have different law.
You're in California. That's supposed to be the law.
Yeah, really? 60 days. Well, I'd be happy about that.
The lawyer will cost you $1,000 easy.
Small claim. Actually, they have to go to court to get the demur.
This is true.
I mean the detainer, no. Unlawful detainer. Yeah.
Living here because you never know when they're going to raise the rent, how much, or whether they're going to kick you out or not. You know.
And we've been talking with
Tate. Oh,
and also I wanted to say that Bernie Sanders will be here at 1 o'clock.
He's going to be here on Tuesday.
On Tuesday.
And the woman he's going to be backing in 3 months, Hillary Clinton, will probably be here in spirit. So keep that in mind.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Any street reports?
Okay. Yeah, before we go on to the next street report, there was a huge Sanders rally at the stadium. Day before yesterday, it was Tuesday. Yeah, it was Tuesday. Was it Tuesday? But in any case, it was at thousands of people. The Sentinel didn't even give an estimate. I heard one activist estimate 6,000 people. The line went out the stadium, across the Water Street Bridge, all the way down to the River Street Bridge, across the River Street Bridge, and then down, at least a couple of blocks, if not more, on the river, on that side of the street, the boardwalk side of the street. So it was quite a turnout for Sanders. Of course, the problem, even in the California primary, is that you have to have ask for a Democratic Party ballot, which is what people should do if they go and vote at the registrar or the county building. You have to already ask for an absentee ballot that's a Democratic Party ballot, which might seem a little confusing to people who are independents or crossover people from other parties. So that's going to make it difficult for Sanders in the California primary to get an overwhelming victory. And even if he does, of course, given the superdelegate situation and the rigged nature of the Democratic Party, he's, I would say, extremely unlikely to win the delegates' convention coming up. And he has already said, as I've mentioned as numerous times on free radio, to cool the enthusiasm of the feel the burn Bernies, Clinton is someone he's going to support because it's the lesser evil, because he doesn't want Trump. Anybody but Bush, anyone but the Republicans will support the Democrats no matter what. And that is really a very old story. I've heard some Sanders folks say, and I don't think I was able to play their, maybe I did. I think I may have played some discussion with a couple of Sanders organizers that came to town, who I later saw on Pacific Avenue with a table covered with Sanders buttons. That they'll be there afterward. They will not vote for Clinton under any circumstances, and they'll continue to organize the revolution, so to speak, as they see it. And, of course, my question to them was, well, good, what kind of leadership are you planning when Bernie comes out to endorse Clinton? Are you going to, have you set up a separate kind of organization? When Bernie says, I'm not interested in running as Green Party candidate, when Bernie says, I don't want to run as an independent, but I'm a Democratic Party person. I want to keep my seniority in the Senate, and I want to keep my committee chairmanships, and so forth and so on. What are you going to do about that? And his answer was, well, we'll figure it out then. But see, that's what distinguishes, I was reading, and I think it's true, a real movement from a quadrennial presidential election charade or hoop-de-doo thing that's it's held to kind of give the trappings of democracy without the substance. You have to have leadership that is responsive to the citizenry. And I don't think Sanders' campaign goes out among the people to find out what it is they want. He has his own campaign, his own positions, and he presents them. They're, you know, sort of milder left positions than, you know, real socialist positions or even European democratic pseudo-socialist positions. And so he's... the organization is not accountable to the population. That's one thing. And also there's no provision for continuing the organization once the Democratic Party... once it gets a couple of planks in the Democratic Party platform, which will be ignored, they customarily are, by the, is my understanding of the Democratic, the way the Democrats go, and the Republicans too, for that matter. Although I haven't done a lot of research on specifically, you know, how each platform was or wasn't ignored after each election. I just get that general, I take that so-called wisdom from critics who say that's just, it's just not important, but people may challenge me later on that. So there's no revolution without some kind of a movement rising up to support it. You know, whether it's a top-down movement, which I don't really support too much, or even a bottom-up movement that has, you know, which is better, which has, you know, people organizing to hold their leadership accountable and require them to stick to the platform so they don't just essentially get corrupted by the power, which is what's happened in this country. It's corrupted by the money, corrupted by the power, and you have the large corporations and the large donors and running the show and essentially donating huge amounts to both parties. But again, I'm not telling you anything you don't know. I wish I could actually be more specific about Santa Cruz and how this is impacting local politicians. We'll have our own elections soon. Or their, I would call their plebiscite, since you really, in order to win these elections, you have to get money, and you have to get some kind of media support. Mainly, I mean, you have to get your message out. And often, what happens, even when you get people who come who begin with good positions, they become, well, they enter into a situation if they're city council candidates, for instance, where they're beholden to the staff. They have to rely on what the staff tells them, and they have to worry about pleasing the staff, because that staff stays while the candidates come and go 2 and 4 years, and they rotate in and out. But the Martine Bernal, the city manager, is forever. Anyway, I'm reiterating what I've said many a time, and let me instead take a musical break so that I can go wash my mouth out with soap or perhaps something tastier. And let's see what we got here.
Abandoned houses, let them rot. Security cameras, lock them up. Raise the rent, create the slum. Waterfront condos, here they come. Rats in the alley, let it rot. Bars on the park bench, lock them up. Empty storefronts, create the slum. Luxury apartments, here they come. Abandoned school, let it rot. Kids on the corner, lock them up. Outsource factory, create the slum. Baseball stadium, here they come. Potholes, let it rot. Homeless people, lock them up. Walmart, create the slum. Starbucks, here they come. Mm-hmm.
robbery, face the poor, fear of the neighbors, lock the door, drug spot changes, crime rate grows, white flight, there they go, abandoned houses, let them rot, security cameras, lock them up, raise the rent, create the slum, waterfront condos, here they come.
That was Ryan Harvey, Create the Slum. I think the group is called Riot Folk. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert, and this is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides on Thursday, June 2nd, 2016. 2016, I believe that's what I was trying to say. Let's hear some more from interviews at the Food Not Bombs meal, which happens every Saturday and Sunday, 4 to 6. And this Saturday, on the 4th, there's going to be a special dance on the steps. And I think pretty soon, maybe a little later in the show, we will, well, you'll hear someone tell you exactly why.
No. Yeah, but you don't even want to know.
Okay, another time.
Only in Santa Cruz can you be charged twice for the same crime. I'm going to court next week for the same crime. I've already been to jail for it. Charging me again, same crime.
What's the crime?
I don't want to talk about it.
Fair enough.
I'm filing suit.
Okay, well, let me know later if you feel like it.
I'm going to see the judicial system.
Good luck. Kim, anything from the report in the street?
No. Really. You know, Palms is really long. It's a big, long line.
I hear they came yesterday to hassle Food Not Bombs people sitting on the steps.
Oh, right. They did. They did, yeah.
Did you see some of that?
No. I did see it. They went and they talked to this guy that I was washing dishes with. And actually, I thought he was really helpful, but I was kind of mad at him, so the exchange didn't really happen. But, he was talked to. And it was like, he was a cool guy, you know? And it's like, he doesn't even do much with us. I think it was the only time he volunteered. It's weird. Anyway.
And what was he told, you know?
I can't remember now. Oh, he was told to police. They wanted him to police the steps and make sure people didn't sit there.
And what did he do? Do you know? Good for him.
He just ignored it.
Thank you, Kim. Anything else?
No. Nope.
All right. Appreciate it. Any street reports?
No
problem. Any street reports from you, ragamuffins?
No, they I had plenty a couple weeks ago. Yeah. I cleared up my stuff back, by the way. That Mountain, they had all my stuff, that court date, that's all been cleared up. Except for why they give me court dates, I don't know.
Because they like you, perhaps?
I suppose, yeah. So I don't like them.
And Robert, any reports?
I understand we were kicked out of the post office steps last week.
Yesterday is what I heard.
Oh, yeah.
But I haven't heard more. I got to get more details on that one.
I heard I was sitting there and the guy told me to get up.
How many cops?
I told him to go fuck himself.
Very good. What did he do then?
So now they brought cops yesterday to chase everyone off.
Oh, I see. And did you leave when they came?
I wasn't even there this time.
What's his alley?
No. Yeah.
And we're on the line here. Thank you. Thank you, Robert. Any street report?
Police beat me to death.
Okay. Yeah, here you are, but still, you know. Any reports? Any street reports? No. Any reports from the streets?
Yeah.
Any street reports about what's happening on the street for Free Radio?
Street reports, it's hard to live without a home.
Here, here.
Yeah.
Any particular problems with police, hosts?
Oh, yes. Police rangers all the time.
Anything specific that's happened you want to talk about?
Happens every day. I've had to hide my stuff in the forests. I've had it stolen. You know, they won't allow you to have it. We were told we could camp at a park.
How long have you been here?
About 3 weeks.
Well, welcome to Santa Cruz.
I've been here 41 years.
Welcome back to Santa Cruz. And we've been talking with? if you wish to say.
Linda Lee.
Thank you, Linda Lee. Mm-hmm. She'll be on Free Radio Thursday night, 6. Mm-hmm. I even have a card if you want me to give you a card with a time zone.
Okay.
All righty, let's move on.
Thank you, Ellen.
Deal with this. Go ahead.
Thank you.
I'm
talking with
Marshall Taylor.
Go ahead,
I'm
going
to tell you, this town needs to open up to the homeless community because we've been fighting this war for almost 20, 30 years now. So I'm fighting with Mr. North. At the same time, this is messed up because of one reason. You have enough funds. You got everything you need to open this town up. You can compensate the homeless, but you just don't want to.
Who's this we're talking about?
The city council.
Uh-huh. Okay.
That's exactly. They know exactly what I'm talking about.
Oh, for sure. So, and have you had any experiences in the last week or two that you want to pass on?
Yeah, actually, I was just camping out around Santa Cruz, so I got another ticket. I mean, come on. How many times do you need to keep going over and over and over on this cycle? All you need to do is accept the homeless community. If you accept us, guess what? We'll accept you too.
What was
You'd be surprised.
The ticket was for camping or?
It was for camping.
Or being in the park after dark or whatever?
It was for camping.
Well, here, by the way, and I usually give these out, this is a flyer.
Right.
And if you call that number and tell them you want to be on the waiting list, it's not, you know, you're not, don't worry about staying on the waiting list, but if you get a ticket in the next 3 days for camping, but camping only, they'll dismiss the ticket.
So when I get on the radio station?
Thursday, probably.
Okay.
6 to 8.
I will be there. I want to be right here with you, Robert. Let me go on the station.
We don't have a studio yet. This is pre-recorded. But
that's,
you know.
Okay.
So here's the card. Here's all the info. And we've been talking with
Marshall Taylor.
And again, remember, you avoid camping tickets, call this number if you get access to a phone and say, my name is Marshall Taylor. I wish to be on the waiting list for the River Street Shelter. And then every 3 days, if you call back, during that period of time, you can't get a camping ticket. Or if you do, it'll be dismissed.
Yeah.
That's what they say.
Yeah, I know. But they say that, but it don't happen that way because it all depends on where you're at.
It could be, but that they are required by law, they say, to do that.
Of course they are,
yeah.
But at the same time, they don't always comply by that law.
They certainly don't. I hear you. And we've been talking with
Marshall Taylor.
Thank you, Marshall.
And the number will be repeated several times during the show, and it's not a magic bullet, but probably not a bad idea. 459-6644. 459-6644. I want to get on the waiting list. You should tell them my name is such and such, then call back every 3 days and say I want to remain on the waiting list. At which point, if you get a camping ticket, it should be dismissed prior to going to court without your having to do anything.
Hey, Tim, anything from the street?
Go ahead, Tim. I was here yesterday when the police came by and asked a couple people to not sit on the steps.
In the post office?
The post office, yes.
And how many cops?
Two. I believe it's three.
And did the people comply? Everybody left? Or some people stayed?
Yeah, except until Abby found out about it, and then she went and said, she openly protested and sat on the cops, sat on the steps.
And what did the police do at that point?
And they left.
They left? Oh, without giving a ticket. This is very disappointing.
Yeah, right.
And?
We got it on videotape.
Excellent. Is it going to be posted on Indy Bay for people to look at or somewhere else?
I don't know. Talk to Abby. She was on her iPad.
I will. Thank you.
And if you go to the Facebook page of Alex DeRossi, DaRocy, you'll be able to find it. And also it's on Abby Samuels' Facebook page. Hopefully it'll be on Santa Cruz Indie Media soon. That's another website I recommend. It's IndieBay, IndieBay.org/Santa Cruz, one word, small letters, Santa Cruz. And it has some discussions with Sergeant Eveleth, who is telling people that they're making a mess on the steps, although other people reporting from us that there was no such thing. Essentially, apparently I wasn't present. I've got the secondhand, but you'll be able to hear people giving accounts, just as you heard Kim and Tim, and that doesn't intentionally rhyme, but there it is, gave their reports, and I think Abby gives her report, too, a bit later in the show. Anyway, there's a dance. This is what I was speaking of earlier. That's going to be happening next Saturday on the steps of the post office. And they'll be taking back the space, taking back the joy, and essentially standing up for the police, or perhaps sitting down for the police, or dancing a tune in spite of the tuneless force of the police. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. This is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert. And if you want to call, you can't call in, but you can leave a message at 423-4833 if you have any thoughts on the show. And hopefully you'll soon be able to call in, probably within the next few weeks. A couple of stories today in the Democracy Now! Radio and television show about federal prosecutors in Minnesota giving up on the murderer of Jim R. Clark, the unarmed 24-year-old African-American guy shot in the head after a scuffle with officers responding to a report of an assault. Witnesses said he was shot while handcuffed. The feds say, well, we couldn't find his DNA on the handcuffs or marks on his wrists. So they're disbelieving the witnesses. I don't know how many witnesses there were, but makes me wonder. And there is a discussion on Democracy Now! Show with Narmeen Sheikh, who's a co-host of Democracy Now! With various black activists about this issue who are fighting the, Black Lives Matter is fighting police terror, in essence, is what it is. And the idea that the criminal justice system, according to Lena K. Gardner, who I believe is the Black Lives activist, one of the people that they're talking with, I think she's a Black Lives Matter activist, says that fatal police shootings are customarily taken to a grand jury system to decide whether to indict the officers or not, which doesn't work, fails to bring officers to accountability. So they've been protesting that. And then the Justice for Jamar movement, Jamar Clark, the guy who's murder is going to go without adequate justice. The NAACP and Minnesota Neighborhoods Organizing for Change, as well as presumably Black Lives Matter, have held actions and meetings with the county attorney and gotten him to agree to avoid the secret grand jury testimony where the evidence isn't released to the public, as distinguished from a public hearing to determine if the DA, once he decides to at least prosecute a case, has to present his case publicly. And that's apparently not going to, the business of sending things to a secret grand jury is not going to happen with fatal police shootings under this current county attorney, Mike Freeman. However, it hasn't been made an institutional change, which is really what the most recent project, Campaign Zero, I guess it's called, activist program of Black Lives Matter is all about. And I want to spend some time talking about that. I already have on one of the lost shows that I'm going to have to repeat, and hopefully I will. I encourage you to check out Campaign Zero, which has 10 different reforms that were put together as a program in the summer of 2015, about a year ago, and which are worth looking at and worth implementing here in Santa Cruz. I've made criticisms of the Santa Cruz Police Department, which essentially have to do with transparency, lack thereof, accountability, lack thereof, the use of force policies, which I don't know that they differ from those of any other city. You know, you shoot to kill, or at least you shoot without regard for whether you're, you know, for the body mass, the main body mass. Again, attempts to get their taser policies, their use of force policies, in terms of their actual use on the streets, has resulted in hitting a black wall, or you might say a white wall, if you will. And it's just like trying to find out what the racial composition is of the citations that they're issuing. They've stopped providing that race information, and I've not gotten any information from the police department on that score. There's a couple of stories on Democracy Now! Today that are worth following. And again, in a deeper analysis, And I think an analysis applicable to Santa Cruz can be found at Campaign Zero. I recommend folks go check that out.
Hey, Tim. So we're talking with
John H.
And John H., you say you were at the River Street Shelter, or was it Coral Street's meal? Which
Coral Street meal.
Yeah, okay. And that is where the homeless lack of services center is, as I call it.
Yeah. No, this is when they still had a dinner. I ate there.
Mm-hmm.
I was walking down the street towards downtown, and this young type kid comes running up to me and says, "I got the wine, you got the weed." And I said, "Dude, I don't do either one of them." And he looks at me really weird, and he goes, "Well, I guess that makes you a better man than me, doesn't it?" And I said, "No, it just means I want to get out of this situation." Then he looked at me like I was insane, and he took off. So,
how long ago was it?
Oh, this is at least 4 years, maybe.
Anything more recent you want to report on?
No, I've been just working and staying under the wire since then, pretty much. I graduated Cabrillo since then.
What was your specialty?
Computer business technology.
Have you been able to use that to get work?
No, I'm not really. I'm not looking for a job in that field because I'm not really that proficient at it. I had to have a major, so I picked that. It was interesting to me, and it was something to do, a goal for me to achieve.
And you did.
I did it.
Anything else happened you want to comment on?
Nothing terrible, no.
And John?
I got an Obama phone, and I got new teeth thanks to Obama.
Well, that's good. Now, if he could stop dropping bombs, we don't have to call him Obama anymore.
Right, right. Well, yeah, but nobody's perfect.
Right. Again, thank you, John. We've been talking with
John H.
Thank you, John.
And as a break from these unedited interviews, let's dive into some music.
Thank you.
spoken, the common should be free. And we're ready to defend it if that's how it's gotta be. From the bankers that the plot, of course, we're there to shut them down. When they try to hide their meetings, people follow them around. Hold our power back. It didn't take too long for us to meet the ancient fate. Crushed by guns and legislation, we fell under the weight. The new unfolds just like the old. The culture is destroyed, the people are controlled. The new enclosure is the same long goal. Privatizing commons, the land is bought and sold.
And that's The New Enclosures by Ryan Harvey. And here's some more from the Food Now Bombs meal on Sunday, the, I guess it was the 29th of May.
With
Abby Samuels.
And Abby, you're here busy sprucing up the free, what do we call this, free market?
Really, really free market where there's clothes, books, shoes, scarves, warm clothes.
Nicely laid out, I might add.
I'm trying to lay it out nice.
But you see, yesterday, apparently, the police were trying to lay everybody else out, or at least evict them from the steps of the post office?
Yeah, from the steps. They claimed there was a complaint from the employee at the post office.
Mm-hmm.
And so the police came. I saw them come, and I told them to go inside. But I didn't see the interaction until probably halfway through. And so I went and took a video. At that point, they were very polite. Don't know if they were polite before
politely
I got there.
Removing people's civil rights.
And they were just saying, we just got a complaint that the place is dirty. And the Food Not Bombs person said, well, talk to Food Not Bombs and they'll clean it up. And so he said, please don't sit on the steps, and the guy agreed, but there's like 15 people on the steps right now, and we will be sitting on the steps next Saturday.
In defiance of the law?
And we will be having a party on the steps.
Oh, tell me about this party.
We're going to have a dance party.
Is there any dance step a person should become proficient at in order to be good at this party?
Any dance you like.
Charleston? I can't really.
Yes, you could do Charleston.
Oh, boy.
But I'm planning on dancing up the storm.
All right, and that's going to be what time on Saturday?
Next Saturday at 4 p.m.
In front of the main post office.
In front of the main post office in downtown Santa Cruz. He also came by and talked to a person.
He being the police officer.
The police, all three police came to talk to someone washing the dishes. And asked them to clean up the steps. And the steps were clean, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no... I wish I had said, asked them, show me where there's any mess. Because there wasn't any mess.
Mm-hmm. Well, did the dishwasher suggest the police officer start washing dishes to help out? Or?
He was one of the homeless guys, which is great. And he said, I don't know what he said to him, but he said, yeah, sure, I'll clean up. I don't know if he did.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is... I asked why we were being kicked out, and this is public property. And he responded, the sergeant responded, or lieutenant responded by saying, I don't want to discuss that with you.
Because we can, I guess. Actually, they didn't. They could, I suppose, they didn't try to push the issue with citations, arrests.
Well, I said, I'm going to sit on the steps, and you can go ahead and arrest me. And they pop in their cars, and I say one was a police car and one was an unmarked minivan.
They had an emergency call somewhere else, obviously.
Obviously.
Thank you, Abby. I see that, you know, you've discouraged those minions of the law from returning to clean up the steps again. That is, they clean off the steps of poor people, seems to be the real objective.
That is. Yeah. I would say so.
Now, there hasn't been a lot of harassment from the post office recently, right? This is kind of new, right?
Yeah.
Months ago there was. But
I heard offhand that someone was impolite to the postmaster, the employee.
Insufficient ass licking?
Yeah,
who can tell? I mean,
yeah.
Right.
I think that's the real reason he called the police. I don't know. I wasn't there. I wish I was there at the beginning.
You were there at a crucial point. You did your job. And yeah. Let's put it this way. You did the beyond the call of your job. And I guess, are you likely to be freedom sleeping Tuesday night, or have you become a little, you're going to be there again?
Whoa. Yeah, but I need help. I need volunteers, because I can't do it all by myself. It's
freedom sleepers work. Will be sleeping on Tuesday night.
Tuesday night at City Hall.
Doesn't necessarily include me, but I suggest everyone else come. Trying to be honest.
Well, at least you're honest.
At least I'm honest. Finally, also, how can folks get involved with Food Not Bombs, Abby, though many already probably know?
Just come any Saturday or Sunday, 4 to 6, or at City Hall anytime after, say, 5.
That's Saturday or Sunday?
Saturday or Sunday.
And can you be reached online?
And for Tuesday at City Hall. Okay. And or you can find us Santa Cruz Food Not Bombs. Oh, wait, it's actually, we had to change our address. Our website was kind of stolen. They didn't renew it on time. So it's santacruz.foodnotbombs.net.
santacruz.foodnotbombs.net.
Yes.
All small letters.
Or Facebook, Santa Cruz Food Not Bombs on Facebook.
And we've been talking with?
Abby Samuels.
Thank you, Abby.
Thank you, Robert. What happened?
So let's look through the thick sheaf of papers I set aside, but rarely read. A couple of interesting stories. Deputies face felonies, a headline in the Chronicle front page above the fold of May 11th. Assault charges for Alameda County officers shown beating suspect in San Francisco alley. And in a little print, Baker proposes spending $17.5 million over the next 2 years on violence prevention and de-escalation. Two Alameda County Sheriff's deputies who rained baton blows on a fleeing auto thief suspect in a Mission District alley in November were charged with assault with a deadly weapon, assault under color of authority, and battery, San Francisco DA George Gascon said Tuesday. The decision to charge deputies Paul Weber and Louis Santamaria with the felonies in the video-recorded pummeling of 29-year-old Stanislav Petrov marks a rare instance of Bay Area law enforcement officers facing criminal counts for line-of-duty conduct, even at a time of heightened police scrutiny. Now, haven't gotten through the article here recently, but I'm wondering, why would it take 6 or 7 months to get an assault charge on these two individuals, particularly when there's a videotape? Maybe it required the pressure of Black Lives Matter, doing hunger strikes and fasts and the other organizations involved, and protests outside the police department and sit-ins, and eventually happened after this May 11th article, but the resignation of Chief Sir, the police chief. In other words, the department itself was perfectly happy to keep this shit under wraps, but when the community or certain activist groups in the community started to turn up the heat, then they had to address the issue eventually. I don't know. I mean, that's speculation. Let's read some more here. The deputies were to surrender to an arrest warrant Wednesday and be held in lieu of $140,000 bail. A prosecutor said an arraignment date has not been set, and attorneys for both men did not return calls. Alameda County Sheriff Greg Ahern said Weber and Santa Maria remain on paid leave. With the criminal probe completed, he said, the department's Internal Affairs Division can move quickly to finish its disciplinary investigation. Criminal probe requiring more than 6 months with a videotape of someone who they ultimately charged with assault with a deadly weapon under color of authority and battery. Come on. I know both deputies very well, and they have an outstanding work history, Ahern said. That's the sheriff. They're both very good, hardworking employees, probably hard-hitting as well. And this is a bad event for them. They're going to have to explain each and every strike, each and every word they wrote in their reports, and all their actions. And actually, it's not they're going to have to. That's what you'd have to do if you were justifying it or creating the cover-up story for Internal Affairs. You would have to explain how each blow is, necessary. And indeed, if you go before a jury and you want to do the Rodney King-type escape, that's what happened with a man seriously beaten on a videotape 25 years ago or so in Los Angeles, And it's often the case, in those rare cases where officers are taken to court, where they say, well, each baton blow was regulation by the book, as though the entire incident wasn't an example of violent, if not sadistic, overreaction by a militarized police department whose responses have become above accountability and usually not transparent as well. Petrov's mother, Olga Petrov, said in an interview that charges did not go far enough and the deputies and others should be held responsible for trying to minimize or cover up the beating before the video footage. Yeah, and of course the officers who are their superiors should also be held accountable and are not. And so the mayor is claiming he's going to spend more money on violence prevention and de-escalation is, I would assume from my distant post here in Santa Cruz, this is about San Francisco, or actually Oakland, or Alameda County, completely inadequate. An attorney for Petrov previously raised questions about why the deputies were allowed to alter their original reports on the incident after they and their attorneys viewed the surveillance video. And it took us about, I don't know, 7 or 8 paragraphs to get to that point. So not only are we talking about felony assault, assault under color of authority and battery, assault with a deadly weapon, but also covering up police reports, which is a very significant thing to do with people who are empowered to kill you. If they find, you know, you're running away, that shouldn't be a reason to kill you, but it has been in a number of police departments. Or if they get into a tussle with you, or if you don't know who they are and you think you're being attacked by someone else and you defend yourself, the importance of accurate police reports is really a really significant thing. And lying on police reports is, of course, their way of circumventing that. And so it's important to make sure that doesn't happen or that people are held accountable if it does happen. I notice they're not being charged with anything around that issue. Of course, I don't know what the charges exactly would be, but, you know, I don't know, some way of betraying the public trust or perjuring themselves in some way, but I guess it's hard to say what it should be, but one gets the general idea. I mean, it's particularly outrageous that they're allowed to alter their reports after they look at the video. And that's one of the problems with the supposed reform of having cops carry their own video. If they are allowed to alter their reports and review the video before they make their reports, then they can challenge any potential inconsistencies that might come up. Since the public doesn't have access to the videos, it's going to be a deal trying to get them. I mean, in Chicago, it took a year to get the chief and the mayor to release the video that showed the guy walking on the street and then just being gunned down. And there's so many names now that I've forgotten who we're talking about. It's on the tip of my tongue. But anyway, continuing with this story about the Petrov murder. A third deputy, Sean Osborne, was placed on paid leave after allegations emerged that he stole a gold chain and money from Petrov after the beating and gave the items to a homeless couple who had witnessed the incident. So what we got here is theft and bribery. But what is the guy's punishment? He's on paid leave and no charges. Hold me while I gag, okay? It's just a mockery, Olga Petrov said of the charges. And it's impressive that this is coming out in mainstream media. I guess, again, the video had something to do with it. It's not clear who took the video yet, but maybe that'll come back later in this relatively long story that I think properly is highlighted on page 1 of the Chronicle of May 11th. Gascon said that the investigation into the beating continues. The city's multi-agency public corruption task force looking into additional allegations relating to false police statements, theft, bribery, witness tampering, and or other wrongdoing related to this case. The beating gained national attention when the video of the November 12th incident was released by San Francisco public defender Jeff Adachi. Ah, so it took some high-profile folks to get this one before the public. The footage showed Weber and Santa Maria knocking Petrov to the ground, punching him and clubbing him with their batons, even after he appeared to surrender with his hands on his head. So note, after the video was released on November 12th, it took until May for there to be charges leveled, and the third individual isn't even charged yet. The beating gained, Mr. Petrov slowed down and began to put his hands in the air just before Deputy Weber tackled him, prosecutor said in a written statement. The two deputies then started to strike Mr. Petrov with their retractable service batons. Yeah, but you knew that 6 months ago. Two videos capture the deputies swinging on Petrov over the course of 40 seconds, striking him at least 30 times, prosecutors wrote. During the beating, Mr. Petrov is heard crying out and saying, "I'm sorry, help me," and "Oh my God." The deputies stopped striking Mr. Petrov when other peace officers from multiple law enforcement agencies arrived. I know, how embarrassing, so much blood on the sidewalk. Petrov suffered a concussion with a mild brain injury, deep head cuts, and multiple broken bones in both hands, authorities said. So I've been calling this a murder, but it's not. It's an assault. I like to apologize to suspects Weber and Santa Maria. They didn't kill him. They just beat the shit out of him. Surgeons had to insert plates, screws, and pins into his hands to repair them. The charges against Weber and Santa Maria include additional allegations that each of them inflicted great bodily injury on Petrov and used a dangerous or deadly weapon that could increase their sentences if they are convicted. Officials said the beating occurred after the deputies spotted Petrov in a stolen car and chased him from Castro Valley over the Bay Bridge and into San Francisco. Petrov allegedly ran red lights and drove the wrong way down one-way streets before running out of gas and crashing. The deputy said in reports that Petrov had rammed two patrol cars, one unidentified deputy suffered minor injuries, and that they feared he was armed, intoxicated, and dangerous. Well, that's certainly a reason to engage in 30 baton strikes in 40 seconds. I mean, you might even, you know, get in the Guinness book for that one. Weber, or is it Weber? I'll call him Weber. A three-year deputy veteran in Santa Maria who has been with the agency for 14 years were put on paid leave following the release of the video. So they've been paid for, what, 6 months while this was being investigated? The third deputy, Osborne, was placed on leave after the theft and bribery allegations emerged. An attorney for Osborne has denied the allegations, but Adachi said last month he believed that the enhanced video showed Osborne twirling a gold chain after Petrov had been taken away by an ambulance. Adachi, who felt the district attorney took too long to decide on charges, and I guess it takes a public defender's some time to kind of work up a head of steam to challenge the boys they usually collude with in plea bargains in the district attorney's office, said he made the video public after one of his former students contacted him about it. So he wasn't even going to do it until he got pressure from some other source. Wow. Certainly there could have been other charges filed, but I would say yes, we are satisfied that the major charges were filed, Adachi said Tuesday. These are felony assault charges, and there's also a great bodily injury allegation, so it certainly comports with the conduct that is shown on the video. Petrov was not charged with any of the crimes related to the car chase in San Francisco, but he's currently in custody in a Marin County jail on federal gun and drug charges. His mother said he became uncontrollable after the beating due to post-traumatic stress. Gascon made a point Tuesday to say that any criminal allegations against Petrov had no bearing on the beating case. Indeed. This is a case about police officers acting beyond the authority of the law, he said. This is a case about police officers violating the Constitution. This is a case about the use of force. It is completely disconnected with any behavior that is being alleged now or in the future against Mr. Petrov. Attorneys for Petrov filed a claim last month against the Alameda County Sheriff's Office, a precursor to a lawsuit, alleging, among other things, that deputies took trophy photos of Petrov as he lay bleeding on the ground. Ahern has said in the months since the beating, his office has taken strides to improve training and policies, including how deputies are scrutinized after using force and how they deploy body cameras. Each of the deputies in the Mission District alley failed to activate body cameras, though turning them on was optional under department rules at the time. Investigators later learned that Weber accidentally switched on his camera, producing a second video of the beating that has not been released. The last time an Alameda County Sheriff's deputy was charged with excessive force was 1969, Ahern said, during the Berkeley riots. So you see, we should all feel much better because between 1969 and 2015, there have been no problems with the Alameda County deputies. I'm sorry, I don't have the records of the deputies, and I don't have any specific instances to cite, but I find that highly improbable, particularly given the fact that the bosses above these deputies took 6 or 7 months to get this matter. Well, I guess they got it to the DA, but they didn't fire these guys or discipline them. Maybe there's a limitation on the amount of time it takes for them to get investigations, to have their conduct investigated by the internal affairs or the so-called professional standards unit. However, the Alameda County Sheriff says, we're moving on forward to make sure we're doing better, he said. Uh-huh. Ahern doesn't believe any charges will arise from the deputy's filing of reports in the case, saying this was no cover-up. Under Gascon, the city prosecutors have filed charges of assault under color of authority twice before. City Sheriff's Deputy Michael Leveling was convicted of beating a homeless and disabled man at San Francisco General Hospital and was sentenced in January to 3 years of probation. Mm-hmm. In March, prosecutors charged three San Francisco sheriff's deputies with their alleged roles in running a jailhouse fight club, forcing inmates to brawl each other for their entertainment. Adachi said it was important for Gascon to send a strong message in cases of police abuse. This is a very, very serious situation in the sense that this is a national story that sends a message to law enforcement everywhere as to what's going to be tolerated, Adachi said. Until today, there has really been no accountability. So if there's no accountability, then perhaps my sarcasm and skepticism may well be justified. This is the story. Deputies face felonies, assault charges for Alameda County officers shown beating suspect in San Francisco alley by Vivian Ho. And you are tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. Got another 45 minutes or so in the show. Let's take another musical break, but this time we're going to kind of jump back in time to a song by David Rovix about the Biotic Baking Brigade. That is a group of erstwhile bakers, actually activists, who pied a few public figures that needed to be, publicly embarrassed, publicly scorned. They suffered some pretty serious responses. They were charged with assault and jailed for 3 to 6 months and treated rather brutally. I interviewed them at the time. This was way back in the 90s. But the song is what you're going to hear now.
Planning on throwing any pie throwers in the audience? I think there'll be some pie throwing going on in D.C. in the next... I don't know if there will be. I guess they got those places pretty heavily guarded. But I know Dave will be down there, so you never know what'll happen. But the president of the International Monetary Fund got hit with a pie in the face several weeks ago in Bangkok. And up in New Hampshire, they got the genetic engineer Neil First. Dave Pike did that. Creamy Jeans is his name. Agent Creamy Jeans. And they got Charles Hurwitz out in California, the mayor of San Francisco, and a whole bunch of other people that really desperately deserve pies in the face, or probably a lot more. So I wrote a song for the Biotic Baking Brigade, and I hope you all sing along with me. If you don't know the words, you'll pick them up by the second chorus or so.
See the man in his limousine, in his tie and well-pressed shirt, hoping that he's not been seen on the lookout for dessert. He knows that he is guilty, and a visit might be paid by the vegan vigilantes of the biotic banking brigade. What's that sailing through the air in the boardroom? See them shiver. You can spend your life hoping for pie in the sky, but the baking brigade delivers.
There's the chorus.
If you sell your city soul to the landlord's greedy pack, you, my friend, have earned yourself a tasty pastry snack. You can call yourself a liberal and hope your crimes will fade, but your sellout soul will be exposed by the biotic banking brigade. What's that sailing through the air in the boardroom? See the shiver. You can spend your life hoping for pie in the sky, but the baking brigade delivers. If you cut down the last of the forests, spew poison in the air. Don't you be surprised to find that cheesecake in your hair. Yes, if you are a corporate criminal, you surely made the grade to receive a fresh baked goodie from the biotic baking brigade.
Here we go.
What's that sailing through the air in the boardroom? See that shimmer. You can spend your life hoping for pie in the sky, but the baking brigade delivers.
David Rovics, the song of the Biotic Baking Brigade. I'm now going to do an interview with Wes White. This is unrehearsed. White is an activist in Salinas who has been at City Hall every night camping out with the homeless there in order to protest their anti-homeless law that says, strangely enough, you can camp. You can sleep at night, you can camp at night, you can put up a tent at night, but if you put your stuff down during the day, it can be confiscated. Let's hear about what's going on with that law and what's happening with the nightly sleep out in Salinas, which has been going on now for 2 months. So I'm on the line with Wes White up in Salinas, or down in Salinas, or in Salinas in any case. And Wes, are you getting any sleep at night?
Pretty much little. I sleep a lot in the daytime now, too. I nap in the day.
Does this mean you're still spending your evenings at City Hall in Salinas?
Yes, we're still down there, about 20, 25 people a night. I just had a few people from Arizona on the way up to Washington that heard about it as well. just kind of an overnight thing for the next bus the next morning. But it's kind of neat. I guess the word's definitely out there. Lots of people tell me, and it's a positive thing. You know, some people have said it's a protest. Well, it's legal to camp there from 6 to 6. It's more just trying to catch people, you know, coming in from out of the cold and just a safe place for people to be. But yeah, we've been there 70 days now.
How many days?
70.
70 days, wow. And have you encountered any flack? I know when we did the Freedom Sleep Out here, I guess number 48 is coming up next week. They set up Klieg lights. They disallowed parking nearby. They hired armed security guards to march up and down. Have you gotten any response from the city that's repressive in any way?
Wow. A couple people set up tents like at 5 o'clock, and the commander came out and gave suggestions to not do that, but nothing near as militaristic as over there.
Yeah, I have to be honest that they have since backed off, although they've completely defoliated the entire City Hall area. So what used to be grassy lawns is now ornamental walkways, and you can't you can't really comfortably lie down and rest there. It's sort of ornamental flowers and plants and walkways where there used to be 9 months ago grass. So we only have, I think there's one security guard. They now allow people to park. The Klieg lights are gone. But at least I'm still going to trial on June 24th. It'll probably be postponed, or I hope it'll be postponed, because we're trying to get evidence, video evidence that the police department is refusing to give us, or the city attorney's office.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? They work for the public. They're supposed to be a public entity, yet it's their private property. And you have to ask for discovery, and they have to give it to you. That's so ridiculous.
Well, it's interesting. I think that's often true with people in power. They tend to feel they can persuade themselves that they are the guardians of the public interest, and they have more power, authority, and wisdom than the average person, and that they somehow were either elected or appointed for that purpose. You know.
Well, and it definitely comes back to power, control, and money, you know, because that's where all the contracts are made. And you're trying to subvert the whole business-friendly model. What's going on with you? What's wrong with you?
Well, what's happening in Salinas as far as the media goes? Do they pay any attention to the protest at City Hall?
They are largely ignoring it because the city knows that they made a major boo-boo, and I guess I haven't been as vocal as possible, or we haven't made our movement as vocal as possible. But, like I said, I mean, it is raising awareness, and it's more taking care of the people that are out there. Catching people as they fall, I guess. You know, as this 90 days approaches, it'll definitely be more of a... I'm trying to get up a letter to the editor. I guess I haven't gotten properly motivated yet to submit one yet. That's going to be tactful yet poignant, and that's a lot of hard combination to get at. Our service providers, you know, they're overwhelmed as it is. They were put on this promise. I mean, they're kind of caught in the middle to some degree. But to another degree, they allowed this to happen. So, how do I give out kudos and point fingers at the same time and actually get some positive done in the process? Because, you know, all sides need to be accountable on this.
What what percentage of the your evening encampment group is unhoused, and what percentage comes from, you know, a place where they could leave and go rest if they wanted?
Percentage-wise, honestly, well, we have two people that basically stay overnight who have a place to be but choose to be supportive, and everybody else does not have anywhere to go.
And has any sort of leadership developed among the folks who stay there that are considering, you know, establishing encampments in other places in the city? Or I think I suggested to you that there be a daytime encampment there by removing all the stuff and putting it into a rented van nearby, something to that effect. We were talking about doing that at least in part here in Santa Cruz for a while. Is there any native leadership that's developed? There are people who are sort of regular and want to expand the activism in some way.
Well, you know, I guess the activism part, as far as branching out into other places, I mean, it's already legal to do 6 to 6. That's all, only what we've been doing is, you know, I guess, trying to raise awareness of being inside of this ordinance and acting accordingly, yet at the same time talking about how absurd it is to begin with. And, you know, people have things that they're doing during the day, so more or less, not really, nobody's really said, oh, I'd like to camp here, or let's start this up elsewhere. I mean, other people already know that they can put a tent from 6 to 6. It's already been put upon people for that. Yet at the same time, there's other people that are getting evicted, like under the bridge on Sanborn, LV Drive, Griffin, Cesar Chavez Park, and Natividad Creek Park, Sherwood Park. I mean, these are all public places, or a few of them, half of them are in public places where you can camp from 6 to 6. Yet they're getting rooted out at night. This other place in Sanborn got a notice in the pit. All these places, they get noticed, but they don't get any service providers, so they're following their administrative procedure. And, you know, that's all I can do is head out, hear people. I'm getting like 3 phone calls already in this taping. Sorry about that. But Sanborn, I guess, they came back, and so that became an issue where they just came unannounced and pushed everybody out and took everybody's stuff. They said they didn't even need to repost.
Now, it was
outside of that 30-day window that they said they could.
Now, when you say they took everybody's stuff, we talked about this a little bit last time. How much stuff has actually been taken and put into storage somewhere, according to what they're supposed to do? In other words, how much stuff have they taken and transported somewhere else and said, good, you can come pick it up, but if you put it down again, we'll throw it away? Is that what they're saying now? Or
They backed off of that, and there has been a few revolving actions of people coming and reclaiming their things more than one time. But for the most part, they still get told, you know, you can have 1 or 2 barrels, but that's it. And that's counterconducive to, you know, the ordinance on its face as well, because they say if it's personal property, they will store it. But then they get frustrated. The guy in charge on the city side, you know, he's the bottom rung of the city, but the guy in charge of the operation. He's getting more and more sucked into the mentality that this ordinance is behind. You know, whereas a month or two ago he was more compassionate, and you know, now he's just losing his patience. When we went to the pit, they had a bunch of a long row of things, and he's like, you know, you're gonna have to get rid of 2/3 of that, because next time if I find it, I'm not even gonna keep it. You know, I'm just gonna throw it all away.
Now, is this guy was he hired from among the unhoused folks, or what was his origin?
Oh, no, this guy currently works for the city. So he's a city employee. He's the bottom rung on the city side, but in charge of the operation whenever they go out and do a cleanup anywhere in the city.
Now, in terms of property taken, how large is their storage area? Have you been out there? I mean, do they document it by giving people receipts? What's going on with that?
Yeah, more or less, you get a little paper receipt, and that receipt correlates to the garbage bin serial number. And, you know, they get a little bit of information and such, especially if somebody's there.
Now, are we talking about a garbage can or a dumpster-sized item? How much space do they allow you?
Can.
Say again?
96-gallon garbage can.
And for those who can't add up gallons, is that like an ordinary trash can?
The kind that you wheel out to the street, usually like a recycle bin might be bigger, or yard waste bin might be bigger. And so it's like a medium trash can or a large trash can, whereas a yard waste one would probably be an extra large or a double extra large.
What impact has this law had on on the homeless community itself? I mean, is it turning more people into thieves to steal from each other? Is it making people angry so they're getting together and doing something? Or I take it not, based on what you said before. Is it making more people flee the area? Is it making more people come and join your sleep out? Sounds like it's pretty much the same size as it was when we last spoke.
Yeah, both of the last two that you said, you know, people are pretty well submitting to it, you know, and then they get found in other locations because all it takes is one person to complain, and all of a sudden you got, you know, four cops there, and they're off the beaten path. So who's to say what actually happened and if it was appropriate, because nobody's even paying attention, and most of these people, you know, they don't have video capability on their cell phones or the battery capacity to use such or the space capacity to film it. So, you know, some of that stuff goes unchecked. A lot of it actually goes unchecked. That's what I keep trying to get out is, you know, you got to video that whole interaction from whenever you first realize he's there, you know, and get it until the end. You got to document as much as possible.
Now, is this protest, you feel, self-sustaining, or if you suddenly decided to go to Miami or got sick or fell in love or something and went somewhere else, would it continue with new leadership?
I think it's catching on. The one problem is I'm about the only person with a vehicle, so and a large vehicle. I have a van. We're actually going through this little struggle right now because my car needs a new head gasket. You know, it's like a $1,400 job. And I need to turn it in. It's getting worse, so it needs to get fixed. But I don't have a loaner car. So for the last couple of days, I've been trying to get a loaner car together because a lot of people depend on, you know, these things being stored in a safe, clean place for the day. They don't have to carry it and then come back and you know, just use it for what it's needed for, just going to bed.
But what about all those many contributions to the famous Bernie Sanders campaign? Is any pittance dribbling its way to you and the fellows who are actually doing direct action to protest real laws instead of huckstering around for the Democratic Party and what will ultimately be the Clinton presidency?
Okay. You know, there are people who, you know, donated blankets and food. You know, as far as, like what you want them to do. I mean, they're kind of in a docile situation as well. I mean, our whole society's fucked up. You know this. I mean, there's wealth inequality, so the only people who care are the ones who are getting injured just as much. The ones who don't care are the ones taking advantage of people. So, you know, you're kind of beating somebody down who's already down. You know, I mean, these people are not really in a position. Yeah, I guess they can make more time. The whole society is definitely very selfish. And Bernie is maybe, you know, a selfish light. I don't know. And that certainly could be the case. But there's been some outpouring from Bernie supporters directly that I've never even met before, but met me as a delegate candidate.
What kind of support?
And there's people that I know.
What kind of support are we talking about?
Bernie Sanders rally. But you know they're doing their own thing too. This guy Brian Bajari, he's been doing church on the beach. Now he's going to try to do something else.
Let me ask you again: what kind of support, Wes, are the actual, you know, have you gotten from Sanders folks? And not just, I mean, you know, a few donations when you ended up at their rally, but has there been any follow up?
Well, right now they're busy doing the primary. So they have been, but I think in this lull, you know, there's quite a few people who are definitely supportive, and the conversation, you know, I think is building. And as far as getting something done overnight or in a month or 2 months, it's a struggle here in Salinas, and trying to get that mentality mindset, I think is going to take a little bit more time.
But the short answer is
maybe it's just me.
The short answer is no more support.
Right. There's definitely moral support. There's a little bit of financial support in the way of blankets and food and lots of, you know, high fives, I guess.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Just minimal, sure.
We're talking with Wes White. So, Wes, once all the wonderful hordes of Bernie fans, and there were many of them here in Santa Cruz. There, somebody estimated it as 6,000 people, the biggest rally I've ever seen, maybe short of the great protest against the Iraqi war in 2003, which, you know, then the day after they started bombing, everybody went home. I mean, right. So similarly, with the, I suspect you're going to have the Sanders campaign. As soon as it goes down, everyone will say, oh, dear, well, we've got to vote for Clinton. Trump's the evil man. And that'll be that. It'll be the, you know, the usual Democratic charades.
If we really do play according to the script, then yeah.
Well, I mean, do you have any sense that there's going to be another outcome? I mean, there's some who are saying that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm actually.
You know, we're going to take this all the way to convention, and I'm writing his name in. I don't care because I'm not voting for someone I don't trust.
Yeah, well, your ballot won't be counted. You can't, you know, I mean, write-ins really, and I don't know, he might be a write-in candidate that's allowed. Many write-in candidates are not.
And he might even turn around and go independent.
I don't think so. But, you know, you never can tell. I mean, he wants to ban...
Well, you know, he's going to take it all the way to convention and basically call people out on their shit, and it's the superdelegates that are basically on the take. So it's really going to be... You know, if you're on the take, go ahead and vote Clinton, and call you out on it. That's about all we can do.
Well, I'm just wondering what impact this has on the homeless community, if any, and I suspect it's zero to none at the moment. But maybe I'm wrong. What's the deal?
Okay, well, directly, I suppose Bernie Pratt. You know, I mean, this may not move as fast as you know either of us would like it. It may not move at all. It may go in the completely wrong direction. But Bernie's the only one who's going to make it come even closer. Clinton's not going to give a shit. She may as well just vote as a Republican. She may as well run. And Trump, he's a puppet master, so what's the point?
Well, you're talking about who's going to be the head of the polo club. That's fine. But I'm interested in knowing who is, and Salinas is going to deal with issues there. And it seems like the one person I'm talking to is the one person I'm talking to. Who's actually? I mean, there are some others for sure.
Well, you know, like I said, with the Sanders campaign, we do have a Salinas for Bernie Sanders, and I think after this primary, they'll be interested in doing something.
But none of those folks have showed up at your rally at your nightly affair, correct?
Not at this point.
Not at this point.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. I mean, don't you think they'd be even less like, well, anyway, well, you know, we can, you know, I'll be calling you back and we'll see what happens.
I will be reaching out to them, and that's all I can really do. I guess that's on their conscience.
Well, don't worry about them so much. I think that there are other groups that are probably more important than they are. They are a group that gets together during the political bubbly-bubbly-pup-de-pup-de-pup, and then they go home, discouraged with the illusion that somehow working for this election means something. To me, it's, you know, what you do means something. What they do is they're playing their little part in the theater of the absurd. That's the problem. But
okay,
anyway,
sure, I hear that.
Yeah. Any other news about Salinas? How are the police treating folks? Anything around food not bombs or free radio stations happening there? Or
People have been getting tickets and trespassing. I think one person's gotten a ticket for a tent that I've not seen the ticket for yet. I've seen a couple people on the street, you know, I guess posted on Facebook, where they're getting harassed and given a ticket. For basically loitering in the sidewalk. I mean, the guy didn't even have a tent or anything, but he did have a shopping cart that was pretty well packed, loaded down. So I think he got a ticket. And, you know, it's just being targeted. That's really part of the laziness of our security force, you know, in quotes, police. They got nothing better to do. They talk about, oh, only high priority. We only go high priority calls. But in the end, you know, how often do you see that materialize? I mean, shooting, stabbing, and robberies. I mean, there's people that even call and say, I just got robbed 5 minutes ago. They go, okay, we'll go ahead and fill out a thing online because the guy's already ran away. So, yeah, but dude, I just had a gun pointed at me. You didn't even come out and talk to me. No, just go ahead and fill it out online.
That's happened to you?
No, that's happened to a couple of business owners in the Alisal district.
Well, Wes, I appreciate the update. Anything you want to add?
Well, like I said, I mean, you know, I'm trying to get a loaner car. We definitely have operating expenses if you want. You know, you can donate to us. We're not non-profit at this point, so there's no tax deduction. Just really out of goodness to your heart. We have a Facebook page, Monterey County Homeless Advocates. We have, it's Monterey County Homeless Union. We got a phone number. It's, oh gosh, I don't even know it. But you can call me directly, 510-274-9275.
Repeat it again slowly.
Okay, 510-274-9275. And, you know, I'm trying to make it back up to Santa Cruz one of these days, sooner or later.
Yeah, well, every Tuesday, people seem to be continuing the Freedom Sleeper protest. There was about 20, 25 people last night. Last Tuesday. So,
how many of those are not housed or housed? What's the ratio on that?
I would say there were probably two or three people who were housed. The rest were either homeless or in their vehicles, and not many in their vehicles. So, but the fact is, it's a sort of a safe zone, similar, I guess, to the Salinas City Hall that you have, where people can come and they can't be comfortable because you have to sleep on the sidewalk. I guess you can't be too comfortable at City Hall either, although you have grass there, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, here's the thing. They went from spraying the ground, you know, with the sprinklers for about 10, 15 minutes to over 2 hours. So now they're trying to flood us out.
Well, they're just
there's pieces of the courtyard that get just completely flooded.
Well, it's a way of making sure that you have enough water in case you need to...
right, thirsty enough to suck it off the sidewalk, yeah.
There you go. Well, suck it in, you know.
Yeah, and that's actually an issue we came up with, not being on the grass, because it's so much colder, and it's like being on a big sponge. You know, the dew would still get everything wet anyway. So,
at least you still have your grass. I mean, as I said before, they've removed all the grass we have at City Hall.
Yeah, I saw that little four-point thing going on there. Sidewalk, four-way sidewalk.
Not sure what you mean, but yeah, I mean, that's what, you know, it has been, they made, you know, numerous sort of, you might call them architectural or landscape changes specifically to, I mean, you know, disadvantage homeless sleepers, but also to disadvantage the public. You now feel like you're in some, you know, plastic wonderland when you go to City Hall. It's just, of course, it was that way before in a way, but at least there was a lot of green grass you could stretch out on. Ain't the case anymore at the Santa Cruz City Hall. So,
gosh, well, I'm surprised they haven't put spikes in yet.
They have put barriers into the bus depot or the bus benches at the bus stop, so they're making sure that people don't dare to lie down. There's a one-hour limit on any kind of bench sitting in Santa Cruz. There's a one-hour limit on sitting down on the sidewalk with any kind of panhandling or political display device. It's bad news. So.
Wow. Man, they're just downright vicious. What people will do to be business-friendly.
No, they are just trying to establish a good commercial downtown. But anyway, let's remember that Salinas we've been talking with, Wes White of the Monterey County Homeless Advocates, and also the Homeless Union. Is there such a thing as a homeless union, or was that a pipe dream?
No, we're meeting every week. You know, we're doing a big sale, I suppose. Like I said, I'm supposed to do a press release, and I've been preoccupied, I suppose. Or just lazy, call it that too. This is a way to advocate for people and stick up for their rights. I am trying to get people's tickets, copies of their tickets, and follow them to their court dates. We have a real attorney, Anthony Prince, and we've got he's got a couple of student intern type people that are making themselves available as well. So we're trying to stick up for their rights, trying to let people know about the ordinance and what their rights are, and tell them at least document everything, because everything that we can get will go toward our next lawsuit. We just had to take a break from that one because it was poorly written. We had another corporate law firm in there, and they just went for one very basic thing, the bulky items, and then when the Salinas redid their ordinance, it kind of made it a moot point and kind of killed their case because there really is no precedent of court siding with indigent people.
It's about time we made such precedents. I'm gonna leave it there. And next time, if I remember, or if a subject comes up, we can talk about the average court case in Salinas, how it works with an infraction ticket. But right now I'm kind of out of time and a little out of energy. And I want to thank you, Wes, for taking the time to do it this afternoon.
Oh, no problem. All right, well, I'm going to take care.
All right, you too, man. Touch. Bye-bye.
When the wind will stop and the breeze will cease to be breathing, like the stillness in the wind or the hurricane begins, the hour that the ship comes in. Oh, the seas will split and the ship will hit, and the sand on the shoreline will be shaken, and the tide will sound and the waves will pound, and the morning will be breaking. Fishes will laugh as they swim out of the path, and the seagulls, they'll be smiling, and the rocks on the sand will proudly stand the hour that the ship comes in. And the words that are used for to get the ship confused will not be understood as they're spoken, for the chains of the sea will have busted in the night and be buried on the bottom of the ocean.
Oh, a song will end as the minstrel ships and the boat climbs to the shoreline,
and the sun will respect every face on the deck the hour that the ship comes in. And the ship's wise men will remind you once again that the whole wide world is watching. Oh, the foes will rise with a tear in their eyes, and they'll jerk from their beds if they're dreaming. But they'll pitch themselves and squeal, and they'll know that it's for real the hour that the ship comes in. And they'll raise their hands, they will meet all your demands, but we'll shout from the bow your favorite number. And like Pharaoh's tribe, they'll be drowned in the tide, and like Goliath, they'll be
Well, we're almost out of time in this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides, but I thought I'd mention briefly what I referred to just for a moment before, Campaign Zero, which is a series of 10 very specific proposals which go into increasingly elaborate detail about what should be done to make real changes in how the police departments of this country and their community relate to each other. That's perhaps a little too gentle way of putting it. The 10 proposals, or the 10 areas of discussion, are: in broken windows policing, number one. Number two, community oversight. Three, limit the use of force. Four, independent investigations and prosecutions. Five, community representation. Six, body cams and film the police. Seven, training. Eight, end-for-profit policing. Nine, demilitarization. And 10, fair police union contracts. One of the most relevant to homeless folks is end broken window policing. And I'll go into some of the details, which you can find online. Just search for joincampaignzero.org. Here's a bit of the discussion of that. We don't have a lot of time to go into it. I may go into it in greater detail On Sunday, when this show comes back, or at least a longer version of it, that'll be on the 5th or so. Boy, doesn't seem too far away. Here's some of the discussion, though, as a sort of a taste. A decades-long focus on policing minor crimes and activities, a practice called broken windows policing, the bane of homeless folks, I might add, has led to the criminalization and over-policing of communities of color and excessive force in otherwise harmless situations. Police killed at least 287 people last year, that would be 2014, I believe, who were involved in minor offenses and harmless activities like sleeping in parks, possessing drugs, looking, quote, suspicious, or having a mental health crisis. These activities are often symptoms of underlying issues of drug addiction, homelessness, and mental illness, which should be treated by healthcare professionals and social workers rather than the police, not to mention housing and leaving people alone otherwise. The policy solutions that are suggested by Campaign Zero and policing of minor broken windows offenses. The following activities do not threaten public safety and are often used to police black bodies, and almost always used to police poor bodies, I might add. Decriminalize these.